This Thursday, we celebrate the 4th of July, commemorating that great day in 1776 when our founders signed their names to the Declaration of Independence, giving birth to a new nation conceived in the radical notion that, quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Close quote. A very simple statement, but a very, very profound ideal. A few years later, having won their war of independence, some of these same men and a few other patriots came up with a plan to make that ideal of a nation become a reality. The Constitution they gave us began with the words stating their purpose. And I quote, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty." Both of these foundational documents set an ambitious plan for the new nation that has led us to become perhaps the greatest nation the earth has ever seen. And at the heart of this greatness is the one key ideal enshrined at the beginning of both documents: liberty. Liberty, a precious word, a noble ideal, a principle to fight and to die for. But with all that, what does liberty mean? Does it mean freedom to do whatever you want? Freedom from any constraints, legal, social, economic, moral, religious, familial? But how could a nation survive like that if everyone just did whatever they wanted? And on the other hand, if we put constraints on freedom, could we really call that living in liberty? The answer is that some constraints, which at first seem to take away freedom, actually enhance freedom. So while, for example, self-discipline seems to be an act against freedom to do as you like, in reality it allows you to control your irrational emotions and appetites so that you can make a rational choice of what truly is best for you. As St. Paul reminds us today, "Do not use this freedom," he says, "as an opportunity for the flesh, for the flesh has desires against the spirit. They are opposed to each other, so that you may not do what you want to do." It's the same thing with all social disciplines, rules, laws, norms that help control passions and impulses so that we, the people, can live together in a more perfect union with justice and domestic tranquility, and in all this, secure the blessings of liberty. But all of this presupposes that we can agree on some basic principles, that we have a fundamental set of common values that help define and even limit the laws we enact to discipline ourselves. And from the very beginning, Americans have shared a common set of values. And they begin with two principles laid out in the Declaration of Independence. First, the idea that there are some self-evident truths, truths that we just know. They're obvious at first sight, or they're obvious once we stop and really think about the issue carefully. And second, that one of the self-evident truths is that there is a Creator, a God, who gives us not only certain unalienable rights, but also gives us the self-evident truths that He writes into all of creation, what we call natural laws. And the Declaration calls them the laws of nature and of nature's God. So we begin with these two most fundamental American values, and from them flow all sorts of other American values about the way things ought to be. But nowadays, people blush or even get angry if you talk about God ordering things. But there it is, right in the beginning of our nation. And without the idea that God determines what is right and wrong, that it's God who decides, that not kings or lords or congressmen or presidents or even judges, without that idea, there would never have been an America, and America would never have grown to be the great nation it has become. And the thing is, right from the very beginning, it wasn't just some vague notion of a supreme being or a creator or a nameless God somewhere out there, some force out in the cosmos that America looked to as the source of these things. It was the God that almost every American worshiped and believed in. The God that George Washington spoke of in 1783 when he wrote the governors of the states as he disbanded his army. He wrote them saying, talking about the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion. Without a humble imitation of whose example in these things, we can never hope to be a happy nation. The divine author he was speaking of was Jesus Christ. And our blessed religion was the religion of our country, of the overwhelming numbers of Americans, Christianity. At the same time, Washington knew that many Christians disagreed on certain tenets of the faith. Catholics, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Baptists, they each had their own unique ideas about certain things in the religion. Nevertheless, he called for us to tolerate those differences while at the same time recognizing and building our United States of America on the fundamental values that we all held in common. What he called the pure spirit of Christianity. Now let me be very clear. The differences between the different churches and denominations are very important. But the point is, the common values, the common basic Christian values of morality are also very important. Nowadays, the different Christian denominations and churches have a lot of differences in their teachings on morality, even the most basic morality. But that's not the way it was in 1776, and that's not the way it was for most of the last 243 years. All Christians shared basically the same set of fundamental moral beliefs. And those Christian beliefs formed the fundamental common American values. Unfortunately, our founding was not perfect because it was, well, on the one hand, it was founded on solid Catholic principles. It was also founded by men. As Virginia's James Madison wrote in the Federalist Papers, number 51, he wrote, "If men were angels, no government would be necessary." But men are not angels. So, while professing the basic Christian value that all men are created equal, and holding that, as St. Paul says, "For freedom Christ set us free," at the same time, the founders wound up tolerating a terrible exception to that norm, a complete contradiction to that norm: slavery. Eventually, it was actually devout Christians who organized the abolition movement. And in the end, the evil slavery had to be cut out by force, by a bloody civil war. As President Abraham Lincoln would admonish his fellow Americans, North and South, after the Battle of Gettysburg, he would say, quote, "We here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth." A nation under God, given a new birth in freedom, but this time more closely aligned to the fundamental Christian values of the people, American values. Sadly, today, most Americans have lost any sense of our foundation on Christian values. And so the question must be asked, can a nation founded on Christian principles and values survive if it casts away those Christian values? If it replaces Christian values with secular humanist values, or Marxist values, or atheistic values. Values based on the false notion of liberty as a freedom to do whatever you want or to do whatever you're told. Values not ordered by self-evident truths that God wrote into our very nature, but in the dictates of the relativistic laws and even lies that can change from day to day. Values that allow our feelings and impulses to dominate our reason and blind us to ignore self-evident truths and so enslave us to our base desires and ignorance. As St. Paul reminds us, for freedom Christ set us free. So stand firm and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. How can the nation conceived in liberty survive if the values that keep liberty from becoming chaos and slavery are ignored or cast aside? Yet some Americans continue to do just that. For example, some argue that passionately that so-called gay marriage is a matter of equal rights. But since 1776 and for over 200 years, in the same way that Americans believed that it was a self-evident truth that all men are created equal by God in dignity and rights, those same Americans also believed that it was a self-evident truth that God also created males and females different, equal but different in their bodies, so that by their nature they could be joined together in a union ordered to producing and raising children. A union that they always called marriage. A union which self-evidently excludes homosexual couples. It's absurd to say that almost all Americans have believed from the very beginning for 200 years is somehow inconsistent with the values enshrined in the People's Constitution. You can see the same thing with those who promote transgenderism. The way they feel dictates how others have to treat them, even if that directly contradicts the absolutely clear, self-evident truth that boys are boys and girls are girls. Feelings, not reason. Not self-evident truths. Or think about all the rhetoric about a woman's absolute right to choose. But since modern science clearly tells us what most Americans have known all along, that an unborn baby is a human life, how does a woman have an absolute right to kill the baby? How can that be? If all men are created equal, and if men doesn't mean just males over 35, but all males and female human beings. Don't babies have rights if they're created equal to their mother? And consider religious liberty. Today, politicians try to argue that freedom of religion really means freedom from religion. And Christians who hold the same basic moral values as our founders are called haters, bigots, and even immoral and un-American. They're even being questioned as being whether or not they're suitable for public office, particularly judgeships. Remember Senator Feinstein speaking to a Catholic, being questioned about a judgeship. She mocked her, saying, "The dogma lives loud in you," because she was a devout Catholic. Now, I can go on, but I won't, so you'll probably be relieved. But how can this be in America? Are these the values of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln that they proclaimed? Are these the values that Frederick Douglass and Martin Luther King proclaimed? Are these the values that hundreds of thousands of Americans, including so many of you in this church today, have fought, sacrificed, and even died for on battlefields across the world? Are these the values that so many of you who are immigrants to our country left home and family to pursue as you came to the land of liberty? Are those the values that you came here for? Yet that's where we are today. How can we survive, especially if our Christian values are replaced by values that directly contradict those Christian values? We did that once with slavery, when we tried to say that mere human laws could redefine what it means to be a human being. For 67 years, it ate at the fiber of our nation until it almost destroyed it, taking 6,000 lives in the process of the Civil War and leaving us with a mess for all these generations. We cannot compromise the self-evident truth about the order that God created. And we cannot maintain a nation that rose above all others based on common Christian values that it embraced if we discard those values or embrace their opposites. As we prepare to celebrate the 4th of July, we rightly thank God for the many gifts that He has bestowed on our nation for these last 243 years. But we should also pray for our nation, for a renewal and rediscovery of the fundamental American values that for two centuries allowed us to use those gifts wisely to become a truly great nation. Values that are nothing less than the foundational values of Christianity. So that those values may, by the grace of Jesus Christ, once again lead our nation to recognize the self-evident truths written in nature by the God who created us all. For freedom, Christ set us free. So stand firm and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. God bless America, and praise be Jesus Christ. Amen.